Hello, America, and all of our listeners all over the world. You're listening to yet another exciting edition of Let's Weekend. I'm your host, the most Brandon Perkins. Joining me as always is Chris Logi. Say hi to the good folks, Chris.
Hello.
Yeah. Once again, it's just the two of us. Trace is out doing mommy things. But we certainly don't have any need for content this week because, whoo, boy. We got a lot of shit that went down this week. Like, usually, you know, stuff happens in a week, and we kind of have to, like, really sift through the stuff to try and find some topics to discuss. This week, our cup runneth over, basically. Obviously, everybody's still talking about the ongoing invasion of Ukraine by Russia. Russia announced that they are shifting to another phase of their invasion, mostly because that first part of the invasion has largely failed. But we've also got some other news. We've got one new COVID story, and it's actually a good one, believe it or not. We got a bit of political stories that came out of my home state of Georgia. And yeah, it's just like everything else in this country, it almost got completely derailed by disinformation. And of course, we got a bunch of entertainment news, including the current future of Netflix, because they're dealing with some shit right now. We'll be getting more into that, but yeah. We'd all been kind of asking when the Netflix bubble was going to burst, and it looks like it might be deflating a little bit right now. But yeah, we got that and some other stories as well. Before we get to all that stuff, let's talk a little bit, as we always do, by all the stuff we've been doing leading up to today. So, Chris, as always, you get us started. What have you been up to this week?
Survive this weekend, because it is in the 80s here.
Yeah, it got up to, it's been in the low 80s here, too.
Yeah, which is not great, but also it's going to go right back down.
Yeah.
After the weekend is done, so that's kind of the
think same the thing. Bit. I think same here. No, it's actually going to get up to 88 on Monday.
We go down, I think, into the 40s, middle of the week.
Yeah.
So there's that bit of stuff, but yeah, I managed to watch The Batman now that it's on HBO Max.
Oh, how was it?
It's pretty good.
All right.
The neat thing is they have a very certain kind of style for this movie. It's about the trauma of Bruce Wayne.
Mm-hmm.
As you know, pretty much I think all the other movies, he's kind of, his parents die when he's young.
Yeah.
That kind of helps create the Batman, but then he's kind of fine for the most part, other than the need to be the Batman to punish random criminals and whatnot. But this Bruce Wayne has not gotten over it so much.
Nope.
As much as you might think. So that's kind of a good part of this, because the big villain is the Riddler,
mm-hmm.
who's kind of going after the foundations of the city, essentially.
Yeah.
After the mayor, the heads of the police, and that kind of stuff, and gets to the Waynes.
Yeah. But the thing is, unlike a lot of versions of the Riddler, this one's a little different, I think, isn't he?
Yeah, there's some very weird stuff with this Riddler.
Mm-hmm.
Very much kind of comes off as an incel.
Yeah.
Of sorts. The way that he does things.
Yeah.
I'm not going to spoil much more than that. There's some weirdly funny bits. I don't know if it's intentionally funny or whatever, but yeah, there's some weird bits in there. But yeah, then it tries to be a very moody kind of movie, which means that it plays a Nirvana song every time it wants to get moody. Which is very weird. I think it's Something in the Way that gets the song.
Yeah, from Nevermind, yeah.
And you hear that little bit of guitar riff that kind of starts early, the slow guitar riff.
Mm-hmm.
You hear that just coming in, you're like, Jesus Christ, they're back to this song. Mm. It's not a bad song or anything. It's just weird to hear a Batman movie where, like, the core music is not orchestrated.
Mm-hmm.
And have a Nirvana song be kind of a main song for when it wants to evoke a feeling. Mm-hmm. And then it's just kind of a whole weird thing. But yeah, there's it's pretty good for the most part. Ends in an interesting way that sets up some sequel stuff
mm-hmm.
For that. But yeah, kind of ends on higher stakes than there's probably been in any of the other movies.
Mm.
Which is kind of a wild thing to say. But yeah, it's a pretty good one. Looking forward to seeing what they do further with this Batman stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Also been watching some more of Old Enough, the Netflix mm-hmm. show where parents of very young Japanese kids are sending them out to do their first errand.
Mm-hmm.
Watched a few more episodes of that. And yeah, it's still a good show. Looking mm-hmm. forward to watch some more. Some of these episodes are a little bit longer. They do have an interesting kid in there that lost her father when she was a few months old.
Mm-hmm.
But they describe the relationship then is very much like he refused to be away from her, you know, even so mm-hmm. much that he wanted to use like the same soap that the baby would use
mm-hmm.
kind of thing. So the mom tries to frame a lot of the stuff they do. It's like, oh, do this for daddy.
Yeah.
But they run a seafood restaurant. So sends the kid down the steps to her uncle, who's catching the sea flounder,
mm-hmm.
essentially. And she very much freaks out the idea of going into this dark room as like a 2-year-old kind of thing. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff there. One thing I did not know about this show is it's been going on for decades.
Mm-hmm.
Some like 30 years or more.
Yeah.
So hopefully they bring some more of that stuff over. There's mm-hmm. plenty of it, so that's good stuff there. And yeah, it's been pretty much it for stuff I've been watching. For games I've been playing, still been playing more Fortnite,
mm-hmm.
Working my way through. They just unlocked the quest stuff for the Prowler.
Mm.
The villain that is tied to Miles Morales.
Mm-hmm.
That is his uncle. And luckily, this is nothing too difficult for that stuff. Now you can get the skin itself pretty easily. It's getting the last couple items. It's a little more tricky, but still nothing too bad there. But that's been that. Rocket League, also been playing some more of that. As I'm working through that, they are going to be doing a like spring event here, I think, next week.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm looking forward to that. And just playing more MLB The Show 22, getting some more stuff done in that. That's been pretty much it. How about you, Brandon?
Well, as for me, I finally finished Elden Ring. I finished it last night. I finally beat the final boss by a damn hair. But I did, and the thing about the game is kind of like, much like with Dark Souls 3, you can save state before you actually start up the ending. So you can actually, like, go back and do stuff. So, like, you can modify the ending. So you can, like, get a different ending if you decide you don't want the ending that you get at that particular moment. I might try to do that. I'm not quite sure yet. But, yeah, it's... Yeah, this is, as far as I can tell, this is going to end up being my game of the year this year, no doubt. Like, I know we're not even into summer yet, but yeah, it's, damn, I don't think there's anything that can top it. I mean, it is very rare when a game like this comes out that has this much hype behind it and this much expectations. And not only does it meet those expectations, but in some ways it exceeds them. Yeah, it's going to be, I'm going to be frank, it's going to be really hard for From Software to top this. Like, just straight up. It's, The game itself, despite the little itty-bitty flaws it has here and there graphically, is damn near perfect. And yeah, I don't know how they're gonna top themselves here, man. I mean, I know that apparently this is the beginning of like a brand new franchise for them. This isn't like a one-off like Sekiro kind of was. This is a beginning of a new universe here. And yeah, I mean, at best, they could basically just replicate this game, but with some, you know, minor differences, you know, graphically and world-wise. And it would still probably get a 10 out of 10, because it's that damn good. But yeah, now that that's finished, I kind of have to fill the void I've had for gaming-wise. One of the games I decided to play is a little bit of a short little horror game that's been kind of making the rounds recently, kind of been a big deal, is a game called Iron Lung. This is a game that is made by, if I can remember, New Blood Interactive, the people behind 2018's Dusk, which was like an old school sort of polygonal PC FPS game. And basically, the game sort of idea is that you are a person who has been put inside of this rusty, rusty, rickety submarine. And the story is basically like far off in the future. All of the stars and planets have disappeared, basically leaving only any survivors in like various spaceships and space stations. And so everybody's trying to scramble to, you know, rebuild civilization, and they end up discovering a moon that is covered in an ocean of blood, like literal, not a metaphor or anything. It is literally an ocean of blood. And the thing about blood is, they don't really know whose blood it is. So what they do is they get this one guy who's basically a convict. And they tell him, okay, we're going to put you into the submarine. We're going to lower you down. We're going to have you take pictures. And if you finish this job, you'll get your freedom after it's done. But the thing is, you're going to be going down really, really deep. So all of the windows are covered up, and the porthole that, you know, the door that you climb in and out of has been welded shut. So the only way that you can effectively navigate down at the bottom of this blood ocean is by use of your instruments and with a device that is basically a deep sea flash camera, so that you can sort of see what's out and around you, sort of. Again, it's just a single flash, so you only get a static image every time you use it. And somehow it works. It works very, very well, incredibly well. The sound design for this game is phenomenal. You're constantly, you know, like you really do feel like you're down deep, deep underneath the sea. You're hearing, you know, things around you. You occasionally come across things that bump into the side of the thing, and you know, you can hear the water, well, I say water, it's blood. You can hear it rushing around you as you're moving. And because you only ever are able to, like, perceive what the world outside of the submarine is through that, both through your instruments and through that camera, it is insanely eerie. It makes you really, really paranoid. And the stuff that you see outside of the submarine is crazy. Like, obviously, it's deep, deep underneath the sea. And even deep underneath the sea on planet Earth, we all know just the crazy stuff that's down there. Pretty much the same here. And you're seeing stuff like, you know, obviously you got, like, regular undersea fauna. You'll come across, like, colossal animal bones. Pieces of what look like some kind of city. Underwater city that might be down there. And there's also a giant sea monster down there that is constantly hunting you. And you never really get a good look exactly at what it is, but it's definitely down there and it's coming for you. I'm not going to spoil anything because I just want people to play it for themselves. But Yeah, and because it uses like really low poly graphics, it's very easy on your PC. So don't worry about like graphics wise if that's what you're worried about. It works really well for pretty much any computer. And yeah, that's Iron Lung. It's damn good. But other than that, also you know, normal stuff, music. Really been getting into Elliot Murphy, who's this sort of old school singer songwriter. Got his start in the 70s. He does like really kind of old school classic rock and roll. People used to call him the new Bob Dylan when he came out. He's still more of a cult hit now, but he's pretty good. And he's also an author too. He wrote a book called Poetic Justice that was a Western that I actually pretty enjoyed. So, you know, he's got many talents. And, oh, yeah, new rodent invasion. Yeah, we got mice again. It had been several months since our last mouse invasion, but they suddenly showed up again last night. So you got to go through all that song and dance again. All out the exterminators, set the traps, all this crap. So much fun. All right, so anyway, you got anything else you want to add before we move on, Chris?
No.
No? All right. Well, in that case, it's now time for everybody's favorite part of the favorite part of the show, Brandon's Random Factoid. And so when a lot of people think about, like, modern reality television, there's usually two shows that they point out as they believe basically kickstarted the whole thing, at least as modern television is concerned. The first one is, of course, The Real World from MTV. That first started way back in the early 90s, back in Gen X. And that was probably, like, I think for a lot of people, when they think of, like, what a reality TV show is, basically just based on regular people, that's sort of the idea they get. But the thing was, is, you know, that type of format where you like see stuff on camera and then there's like an interview afterward, I think a lot of us even back then could tell that some of this stuff was sort of manipulated to a certain extent. Like, you know, they would, like, if there wasn't any drama, like the producers would like manufacture drama just to boost ratings and stuff. But probably the other show most people, when they think about modern reality TV, the other part of reality TV, that would be Cops. Yeah. Now, I don't think Cops is on television anymore, is it?
Reruns.
I mean, yeah, there'll be reruns, but I don't think it's really, I think they canceled it.
I think they canceled it a few years ago after one of the many shootings happened at some point, I assume.
And funny thing, of course, about Cops is you can pretty much watch the increasing militarization of the American police force over the years that show was on the air. Because, like, you know, that show actually started, like, in the late 80s. And back then, like, it was really, like, lo-fi stuff. It was like, you know, dude's drunk at a party and he won't leave, or there's a domestic disturbance, or there's like a speeding, or like a guy's caught drunk driving, stuff like that. Stuff that was, you know, could be dangerous on its own, but it wasn't exactly like really spectacular. And then the 90s rolled in and suddenly the guns started to get bigger, you know? And, you know, also, I mean, even then the producers had to cull through like thousands of hours of raw footage to make an episode. And, you know, editing film, depending on what you do, can seriously really alter how you end up viewing an event, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. But see, here's the thing. The Real World and Cops, they are considered like the modern sort of foundation of reality television, but they were not the first. No, in fact, the very first reality television series, as we think of it today, came out all the way back in the early 70s. It was a TV show that was aired on PBS, that's Public Broadcasting Service, from January 11th, 1973 to March 29th, 1973. And all the footage was shot in 1971. It was called An American Family. It was one season, 12-hour-long episodes that would air Thursday nights at 9 p.m. that was all edited down from about 300-some-odd hours of raw footage. Basically, what it was is it was a chronicle of a sort of upper-middle-class white family in Santa Barbara, California, called the Louds. And basically, there were... Yeah, you know, there was seven members of the family. There was Bill and Pat Loud, the husband and wife, the mother and father. There was Lance Loud, who was actually one of the first openly gay individuals to show up on American television. He was, I believe, the oldest son. There was also the younger brothers, Kevin Robert and Grant. Kevin Robert Loud and Grant Loud. And then there were the daughters, Delilah Ann and Michelle. And of these seven, only three of these individuals are still around. Bill Loud died in 2018. Pat Loud died in 2021. And Lance Loud sadly passed away in 2001. He sadly passed away from an HIV-related illness. What makes this particular TV show, like, sort of, what made it such a big deal back then, and how, I guess, weirdly prescient a lot of it is now, is that it was the first show to start up the debate on whether or not the presence of the camera actually had any real effect on the lives of the family itself. Because the thing about this show is, you don't know it when you're starting out, but you're actually watching a family slowly break apart. What ended up happening is that towards the end of the show, Pat and Bill Loud ended up divorcing. In fact, Pat actually is on camera basically demanding a separation from Bill Loud. And in 2011, the New York Times did a bit of a sort of like a legacy post on the history of the show. And they wrote this. They said, "For the viewing public, the controversy surrounding An American Family doubled as a crash course in media literacy. The Louds, in claiming that the material had been edited to emphasize the negative, called attention to how nonfiction narratives are fashioned. Some critics argued that the camera's presence encouraged the subjects to perform. Some even said it invalidated the entire project. That line of reasoning, as Mr. Gilbert has pointed out, would invalidate all documentaries. It also discounts the role of performance in everyday life and the potential function of the camera as a catalyst, not simply as an observer." There's long been a debate about whether or not the family separation, specifically... was the camera's presence what caused this family to break apart? Were there already issues that were in the background that were simmering to a head and the camera just so happened to be there to catch it when it finally boiled over? There was a lot of stuff. And in hindsight now, with all the like modern sort of reality shows that have come out since then, we now kind of know that, to a certain extent, the presence of the camera really does actually modify events. Because for whatever reason, when people realize there's a camera there, they will kind of play the part. They may not intend to, but they do. So basically, after Lance 2001, a couple of years after that, PBS would broadcast a show called Lance Loud, A Death in an American Family, which had been basically had been recorded during Lance's last year. All the family members came back together, sort of at the invitation of Lance before his death. Family members participated in the documentary with the exception of Grant. Grant was, I guess he just decided he didn't want to do with it at that point. Lance, at this point, was 50 years old. He had been addicted to crystal methamphetamines for 20 years, and he had contracted HIV at some point, and then he finally died of liver failure that year. Subsequent to the showing of the show, Pat and Bill Loud actually moved back in together, which was one of Lance's last wishes. They lived very close to three of their four surviving children and kept in close contact with Kevin and his family who lived in Arizona. Bill finally passed away in 2018. Pat died a couple years later in 2021. There's a lot of stuff like this. I'm pretty sure like a lot of this can be watched on YouTube now. You'll also see a lot of retrospectives every now and then when the subject of live television comes about and its effect on people. Back in 2011, PBS presented actually a 2-hour film called An American Family Anniversary Edition that was sort of a compilation of various moments from the documentary series. It's actually out on DVD. That was An American Family, the first modern reality television series in American history. Ended up giving birth to several imitators, and it kind of ended up being the first example of of fiction and reality sort of colliding with each other. And that has been yet another installment of Brandon's Random Factoid. All right, so with that out of the way, we are now moving on to the show proper. And as always with the show proper, we start off with our assholes of the week. And our first asshole of the week is InfoWars. And of course, they filed for bankruptcy this week in the face of all those Sandy Hook lawsuits because they needed to find a way to keep functioning and staying in operations while dealing with all this shit.
Yeah.
And because of this declaration of bankruptcy, one of these trials has had to be delayed as a result.
Yeah, so the weird thing with the bankruptcies is not the good news that people might want.
Yeah, it's Chapter 11.
Yeah, he's essentially trying to find a way to minimize the damage for this stuff.
Yeah.
That is happening. Unfortunately for him, not all of these lawsuits are at InfoWars.
Mm-hmm.
Some are directly to him, which is not, there's not an easy way to get out of that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not going to necessarily work out so well for him.
Yeah. And to be honest, if I was the authorities, I'd slap an ankle bracelet on him. Because this dude's totally a flight risk.
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah, that is the thing there. The trial that's been delayed is one that was set to determine how much he should be paying the families of Sandy Hook victims.
Mm-hmm.
As a result, they have to delay this trial a bit to figure out what's going on with the bankruptcy protection stuff for that. So, yeah, there you go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Man, I honestly don't know how this is going to end. I don't. Like, there really is no out for him at this point.
Yeah.
But on top of that, we've also got this week. A federal judge struck down the travel mask mandate this week, which kickstarted a huge big deal because a lot of legal experts are saying that she misunderstands public health law, the judge, and the Department of Justice will be appealing the ruling.
This judge has an interesting history because she was, she sits on the district court for the Middle District of Florida.
Mm-hmm.
She was nominated by Trump in September 2020.
Mm-hmm.
That's age 33 and confirmed by a 49-41 Senate vote later that year.
Mm.
That vote was after Trump lost the election.
Yep.
So essentially, she should,
mm-hmm.
As a federal judge.
Yeah.
The whole health law thing here, let's see. Yeah, she cited the 10-letter word that can be found in the Public Health Service Act mm-hmm. which passed in 1944. Specifically, the law says that if the government is trying to prevent the spread of communicable diseases, it can, quote unquote, provide for such inspection, fumigation, disinfection, sanitation, pest extermination, destruction of animals or articles found to be so infected or contaminated as to be sources of dangerous infection to human beings, and other measures as in his judgment may be necessary. Mm. It's the sanitation is the part that she zoomed in on. The administration argued that masks qualified as sanitation under the law, but Mizell disagreed, opting for a much narrower definition of that term that would exclude measures like face coverings. Mm. Yeah, let's see. Aaron Fuse Brown, a law professor at Georgia State University, said, if one of my students turned in this opinion as their final exam, I don't know if I would agree that they had gotten the analysis correct.
Yeah.
It reads like someone who had decided the case and tried to dress it up as legal reasoning without actually doing the legal reasoning.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, in her opinion, Mizell says, in a common way, judges decide the meaning of words, and the law is to look up dictionary definitions when they were contemporaneous with the passage of the law. So look up in 1944, which could have been taken to mean either actively cleaning something or measures to keep something clean, but ultimately settles on the former definition. Wearing a mask cleans nothing, at most it traps virus droplets, but it neither sanitizes the person wearing the mask nor sanitizes the conveyances. Mizell says a reading is bolstered by the fact that other words listed alongside sanitation in 1944 law, such as fumigation, pest extermination, refers specifically to cleaning something or trying to wipe out a disease. But yeah, the law professor says that while this understanding of sanitation may be true for lay people, it's not how the term is used in the public health field or understood by the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, which issued the mandate. Sanitation was just the old way in which public health parlance of taking traditional public health steps to prevent the spread of disease.
Hmm.
Which, yeah, makes sense when you go back to the 1918 influenza outbreak, which came roughly 2.5 decades before the passage of the Public Health Service Act, where people used masks during that whole thing. She also said the reasoning is poor, but also has really drastic and dire consequences for public health, which is the part that makes it not just a joke, but it actually makes it really frightening. And yeah, sort of this opinion alone starts to try to set a precedent that restricts the CDC's ability to respond to public health emergencies in ways that it deems appropriate. If the opinion is upheld by a federal appeals court or the U.S. Supreme Court, legal experts warn it could hobble the government's ability to control future outbreaks.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's just what we need.
Yeah,
there are lots of wild stories of pilots announcing, like, mid-flight that this thing had happened and told people they don't have to wear masks anymore and having, like, a crew and all that take off their masks, which is like, that should not be happening at all. These people all signed up for a flight wearing masks. They should have to finish the flight, at least.
Yeah.
Because there are people on those flights that, you know, did so knowing that everyone would have to wear masks and having the unfortunate timing of being up in the air during that point. That's like a thing that should not be able to be revoked mid-flight.
Yeah.
Especially now that there's some airlines talking about pulling people off of their do not fly lists that were, you know, done so because they refused to comply with rules like wearing masks and all that. It's like, what was the point of the list if you can just easily take people off when the rules change like that? There may even be a thing that doesn't stay. Mm-hmm. So we'll have to see.
Yeah. And also, even though the pandemic is on its downswing now, cases are still happening. Just need to put that out there. but yeah. Next assholes of the week is the New Jersey Catholic Diocese. They finally agreed to pay $87.5 million to settle their sexual abuse lawsuits. And there were a lot of them.
Yeah. This is a bigger settlement than the one with the Boston Archdiocese, mm-hmm. though that's probably more of an issue of time than anything.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, this includes roughly 300 victims. Details about what happened to those will not be included in the proposed settlement. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it is going to at least help out those people.
Mm-hmm.
If approved, the settlement would exceed the nearly $85 million settlement in 2003 in the clergy abuse scandal in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
That's less than other settlements in California and Oregon. Yeah, the agreement between the Diocese of Camden, which encompasses six counties in southern New Jersey on the outskirts of Philly, and plaintiffs, was filed with the U.S. Bankruptcy Court in Camden on Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, these alleged sexual abuse accounts happened from the 50s to the 90s.
Mm.
But most of it was in the 60s and 70s.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, abuse survivors who filed a claim of bankruptcy could get roughly about $290,000.
Mm.
So yeah, hopefully those people can put it to good use.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And finally, Florida Governor Ron DeSantis pushed a bill through a special session to revoke Disney's special district status along with a new voting map with a bigger GOP advantage.
Yeah.
We don't really have to talk about that second one because that one was kind of all people already knew that was going to happen. It's that first bit that kind of got everybody out of surprise. I really don't think that he realizes just how badly he screwed himself this way.
Well, there's a whole part of this where it is essentially a bill that is just for show.
Yeah.
Cannot really do anything.
No.
Because revoking that special district status
mm-hmm.
can only be done by the people in that special district.
Yeah.
Guess who put them there.
Yeah, guess who controls that special district?
Disney put those people there.
Disney and Disney World isn't going anywhere. He can't do anything, really.
He gets to look like the hero to his dumb base.
Yeah. It also means for certain that he and the state government is going to get the crap sued out of them by Disney and their army of lawyers.
This very much seems like a First Amendment case.
Yeah. And also, say that he had managed to succeed. Do you know what would happen to property taxes in the state of Florida if Disney left?
Well, it's not so much if they left, if they revoked this special district, the debts that are on that district will be spread out across at least the people in the nearby counties.
Mm-hmm.
That would increase their taxes by roughly up to about like $3,000 each a year.
Yep, that's right.
They would be on the hook to pay this $1 billion.
Yeah. So he's lucky that he did this purely theatrical thing and that this is really more than just an act than anything, because otherwise he would have signed his political death warrant.
Yeah.
Like that would just be it. Like Florida's economy would go into free fall and he'd be remembered in history as the guy that basically killed the state of Florida, you know, before the Atlantic Ocean did. But yeah.
Just shows how much of a psychopath he is.
Yeah, it's purely performative, really. But he messed with the mouse.
Yeah.
You don't want to mess with the mouse. The mouse will mess with you and make you wish that you never tried to mess with the mouse in the first place. But yeah. But moving on from there, we do have one hero of the week, and that is the legal system of the United States Air Force, because this week, for the very first time in the history of the Air Force, a general officer was actually convicted in a court martial.
Yeah. He was found guilty of abusive sexual contact in military court in Ohio on Saturday.
Yep.
Major General William T. Cooley. Found guilty on one of the three specifications of a sexual assault connected to a 2018 incident in New Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
A senior military judge found he was guilty of the first specification, kissing the victim on the lips and tongue with an intent to gratify his sexual desire.
Mm.
He was not found guilty of the other two specifications. He has pleaded not guilty. But yeah, that's good news.
Yep.
They get some actual due process.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, pretty much. Because people don't realize this. The Air Force is our conservative wing of our armed forces. And it's notoriously, tight-knit. And the fact that they actually managed to sort of break through the barrier this time is itself very much a sign of progress. But yeah, so yeah, good stuff, good stuff. Okay. Now then, with that out of the way, it is now time to move on to the proper show proper. And we're starting off with a couple of stories from my neck of the woods in Georgia. And the first one is that a federal judge ruled this week that Georgia voters, that is us, can proceed with attempts to disqualify Marjorie Taylor Greene's re-election. And on top of that, she also had to attend a hearing to defend herself, and she basically flubbed the whole thing, very badly. Like, clearly she screwed up very badly.
Yeah, this thing was done by a group in Georgia that essentially said there is a rarely cited provision of the 14th Amendment.
Mm-hmm.
That, as it says here, who, having previously taken an oath as a member of Congress to support the Constitution of the United States, shall have engaged in an insurrection or rebellion against the same, that person cannot serve in Congress, essentially. Which was ratified shortly after the Civil War, meant in part to keep representatives who had fought for the Confederacy from returning to Congress. But it specifically applies here as well, potentially. They did that. So they had a hearing to have her testify, get asked various questions. And yeah, a lot of times she just said, "I don't remember."
Yeah, even though we have her on tape, and shit like that, but no.
Yeah, they're moments like asking her about talking to Trump about enacting martial law in the wake of this stuff, and she said, "No, I don't remember any of that." Talking about, let's see, while on the witness stand, she reiterated baseless claims about election fraud and repeatedly said that her charged rhetoric ahead of January 6th referred to challenging the electoral count, not a call for violence. I don't support violence of any kind. My words,
yeah, bullshit.
Mean anything for violence. Which, let's see where is this at. This was not a case where the leaders were on horseback leading the charge. The legal director for Free Speech for People, the group that was leading this attempt to disqualify her from running for re-election. Rather, the leaders of this insurrection were among us on Facebook, on Twitter, on corners of social media. That would make your stomach churn. The evidence will show that Marjorie Taylor Greene was one of them. And she said the challenge to her candidacy is a lie and a scam designed to take away our constituents' rights to vote for the candidate of their choice.
Here's the thing about that. She was the only person on the Republican Party of that ballot because her followers basically intimidated her opponent into dropping out.
Yeah.
And by intimidated, I mean literally, death threats, broken windows, shit like that.
Yeah. See, she answered many questions Friday about her statements, social media posts, and conversations in the days before January 6th with, "I don't know," or "I don't recall." That's whether her office gave tours to any members of the public in the days before the riot, whether campaign or congressional staff provided information or funds to people who participated in or organized the riot. She said no. Let's see, they pointed to a tweet on January 5th calling for the next day a 1776 moment, which is code for political violence in some far-right circles. Greene told the judge she's never heard anyone use 1776 in connection with violence. Let's see. It was also played a January 2021 Facebook video in which Green said, "You can't allow it to just transfer power peacefully like Joe Biden wants. Allow him to become our president because he did not win this election. It's being stolen." In the same video, Green encouraged people to come to Washington as she and other members of Congress prepared to object to the certification of the election results. She says the video was taken out of context. As whether she advocated for then President Donald Trump that he imposed martial law to remain in power. She said, "I don't recall." Attorneys argue that not only is her rhetoric protected political speech, she was a victim of the January 6th attack, not a participant.
No.
Yeah, the right to vote is at stake right here, right now, because they want to deny the right to vote to the thousands of people in the 14th District of Georgia by removing Green from the ballot. Her attorney said in opening arguments, "Those voters have the rights to vote for the candidate they're choosing."
Mm-hmm.
Which is true, but also that doesn't mean that she has the right to be that candidate.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, there was a whole bit where she was talking about, where they were asking her about calling Nancy Pelosi a traitor for certifying the election, all that kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They're like, "Oh, we got a video of you saying this." And then she's like, "No, no, no, what I was talking about was, you know, something else," whatever she was trying to use, but...
Yeah.
But yeah, it seems like people are trying to do a similar challenge for Madison Cawthorn.
Mm-hmm.
But that was tossed out by a judge in North Carolina.
Yeah.
Similar in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Assume for Gosar or whoever, I don't know who the other one is, but...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's something there.
Yeah.
I hope she loses this.
Yeah. And then yet another story from out of my home state. So my state ranks near the bottom when it comes to access to mental health care and mental health facilities. And it's been an issue that people have been talking about in the state for a good decade now. And it's largely a bipartisan one. Like, everybody has a person in their family who's dealing with some mental issues or mental health issues or some kind of, you know, issue related to that, and they need help. And, you know, as compared to most other states, our state just does not cut it. So finally, what happened this week is a mental health bill that both Democrats and Republicans in the state overwhelmingly supported was getting ready to get approved and go to Governor Kemp's desk. And then the disinformation shit started happening. And this stuff is just wild. It pretty much started with this one asshole, Representative Phil Singleton, who's like just a ween on the ass of Georgia's politics. He's a leader of the Freedom Caucus in the state of Georgia. He started talking about this. He claimed the bill would, quote, massively expand government in the style of Obamacare and enable, quote, backdoor gun grabbing.
Throwing that in. They're going to steal your guns.
Yeah, and then he even went a little further. He said, "Under this language, treatment for things such as gender dysphoria and pedophilia are automatically included and would therefore be required to be covered, the cost of which will spread out amongst all Georgians." And then it just got worse. There's this nonprofit down here called Truth in Education, which is one of those... You have an idea what this type of group is. They started putting out these flyers that said that Georgia was set to use the law to take guns away from citizens and that pedophilia would no longer be illegal, but instead a health diagnosis. Suddenly, a bunch of like old people started showing up at committee hearings with signs. Pat Witt, who's like a candidate for insurance commissioner here, he was at a Trump rally. Started talking about the false claim that the government would take over mental health care guided by the World Health Organization. It's none of this is true, by the way, like none of it. There's not even a hint of a kernel of truth in anything that these people are saying,
yeah.
But it nearly derailed this entire thing. Now it got signed in. Okay. Governor Kemp signed it in on the 4th. But yeah, this it nearly killed this whole thing. Something that we desperately need in this state.
Yep. This passed into law April 4th.
Mm-hmm.
With great support from both sides.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love the notion that they're like, these pedophiles, they should have no treatment. They just continue to be pedophiles.
Yeah.
Never get therapy to get better. Take your logic to the end point. Where does this go for any of this shit?
Yeah.
And that's why none of it makes sense.
Yeah. And it's also just an example of how they take the most innocuous things and try to twist it into some new political conspiracy theory.
Yeah, because they're trying to fight culture wars at all times.
Yeah. And I need to reiterate, this is something that we desperately needed down here. Like, the mental health situation in Georgia is really bad. And, you know, the stuff like the, you know, the opioid epidemic stuff just made it worse. And, you know, it's just something that was so innocuous and something that anybody, you know, any even-minded person would be able to get on board with. And yet some people are so cynical enough to try and twist it into something else. It's amazing how some people's minds work, really. But anyway, moving on from there. Over there in Europe, there was a charity kitchen that's linked to World Central Kitchen, the famous global charity, that sadly was hit by a Russian missile this week and was destroyed.
Yep. This was a charity kitchen in Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. Yeah, they had been working in Kharkiv.
Mm-hmm.
The CEO for World Central Kitchen, named Mook, mm-hmm. posted a video showing that what remained of the building.
Mm-hmm.
The fire was still burning in the building behind him. Cars were burned out around him, parts strewn about, even in the trees nearby.
Mm-hmm.
Four of the partner restaurant staff members were wounded.
Mm.
A lot of damage to the kitchen. Luckily, no one was killed.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think they will be okay, ultimately.
Yeah. Like, ultimately, it's brick and mortar. They can rebuild it.
Yeah.
Or, you know, they could just move the place.
Yeah, they'll find somewhere else to be.
Yeah. But it's lucky that nobody was killed. But yeah. So moving on from there, one COVID story for the night. Moderna, the people who produced the vaccine that I got, announced they have a new bivalent version of their COVID-19 vaccine that not only fights the original strain, but also fights the newer sort of branched off strain that recently showed up.
Yeah, it targets both the original strain of COVID and the beta variant.
Yep.
So manages to go after two strains.
Mm-hmm.
Appears to produce high levels of antibodies for months that can neutralize the virus.
Mm-hmm.
They added that another bivalent vaccine that combines the original strain with the Omicron strain remains their lead candidate for a fall vaccination campaign. Aimed at protecting people against a winter surge. Results from that testing will be expected later this spring.
Yep. Awesome.
Hopefully good things come out of that.
Yeah. Like I said, we are on sort of the downward trend of the pandemic, and the more, you know, antibodies we can get in us, the better. So, you know, the more we can do that, the quicker this thing becomes, you know, becomes something that we can, you know, just deal with at regular. But yeah, so good stuff there. And now for some, just another point of, like, some people just have too much damn time on their hands. A man from California was charged after he allegedly sent death threats to Merriam-Webster, you know, the people behind the dictionary, over gender definitions.
Guy's 34 years old, was charged with one count of interstate communication of threats to commit violence
mm-hmm.
in federal court. Yeah, according to the U.S. Attorney's Office in Massachusetts, where Merriam-Webster is based. According to a criminal complaint between October 2nd and October 8th, Merriam-Webster received threatening messages submitted online through the company's website Contact Us page. In the comments section for web pages corresponding to the definitions for the words girl and woman.
Yeah.
And, yeah, this guy used the username Anonymous with the Y capitalized.
Yeah.
Shared opinions about certain controversial topics and comments demonstrating bias.
Mm-hmm.
The comments section for web pages corresponding with definitions for boy, girl, female, and trans woman. One post under the dictionary entry for female on October 2nd reads, "It is absolutely sickening that Merriam-Webster now tells blatant lies and promotes anti-science propaganda. There's no such thing as gender identity. The imbecile who wrote this entry should be hunted down and shot."
And that's just one. He sent a bunch of these.
Yeah, he allegedly used the company's Contact Us page to send threatening despicable message related to the LGBTQ community.
Mm-hmm.
Less than a week later, Merriam-Webster received a disturbing message under the website entry for girl. "The moron who created this fake definition should be hunted down and shot. I am sick and tired of these cultural Marxists.
Ding, 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 there it is.
Destroying the English language. Merriam-Webster headquarters should be shot and bombed. Boys aren't girls." I guess so.
This dude needs a hobby.
Needs treatment.
Yeah, he needs hobby, he needs treatment, he needs therapy. He also needs a friggin' job.
I'm sure he has one.
He might.
It's just not... He needs therapy to not be in this fucking rabbit hole of bullshit.
Yeah, he needs to be deprogrammed, is what he needs. He needs to...
Yeah, let's see. Yeah, they later identified Anonymous as Hansen by tracking the origin of the messages to an account linked to his family's home.
Mm-hmm.
So good job there. Found guilty, faced up to 5 years in prison and 3 years of supervised release, along with the $250,000 fine.
Mm.
Yeah, that's good that they caught him.
Yeah.
So at least he couldn't act on any of the stuff he said.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sure he's not the last of these people.
Yeah.
Especially with what the GOP is planning to do throughout this country in criminalizing transgender people.
Yep.
Because I'm sure you're seeing that they are not going to stop at, keeping it limited to 17-year-olds.
Mm-hmm.
We'll go up to 25. It's like, oh, you're just going to work your way all up until you make it illegal to be transgender.
Yeah.
Put them in jail and, I don't know, go full Nazi with all this.
Mm-hmm. Now for some good news. A bunch of workers at an Apple store in Atlanta filed to unionize as the corporation's first retail employee union. That's amazing.
Yep. That'd be the first for Apple.
Mm-hmm.
The nation. Let's see. Yeah, they submitted their filing on Monday. They're the one in Atlanta's Cumberland Mall.
Mm-hmm.
That includes salespeople, technicians, creatives, and operations specialists.
Mm.
But yeah, that's going to be one of the first for these big tech companies here, especially on their retail side. More than 100 employees are eligible to join the union effort. At least 30% of workers must sign union authorization cards.
Mm-hmm.
Show interest for the group to be registered with the NLRB.
Yep.
70% of the Cumberland Mall workers have shown interest.
Mm-hmm.
So hopefully that works out.
Yeah. Once again, another sign that momentum's on the side of right now. So keep at it. Maybe it'll be the first of many. But next up. Okay, so everybody may remember a couple years ago that Notre Dame, the cathedral, caught on fire and burned. Had to be restored. Well, during the restoration, some archaeologists actually digging around there, and they actually found some new artifacts while they were there.
Yeah, they found a human-shaped lead sarcophagus
mm-hmm.
underneath the floor.
Yep.
So, we're almost at the 3-year anniversary of the fire.
Hmm.
The day after the blaze, archaeologists were called in to assist with the conservation and restoration of the cathedral. as workers set to the task of rebuilding.
Mm-hmm.
The vaults crashed here during the fire and opened a hole into this 19th century heating network. Underneath mm-hmm. there was a series of layers, which is very dense, interesting, and fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
They're permitted to excavate a small area of the exposed flooring in preparation for scaffolding that needed to be constructed
mm-hmm.
in order to restore the church's large spire.
Yep.
But during that preparatory excavation, archaeologists discovered a number of historical artifacts, including painted sculptures, tombs, and sections of the lost rood screen, which was a sort of fence that was constructed in 1230
mm-hmm.
to separate the choir from the congregation.
Mm.
The rood screen was demolished during the time of Louis XIV. Mm-hmm. The 19th century excavations performed by Eugene Viollet-le-Duc led to the discovery of sections of the ornate wall.
Mm-hmm.
Sections are currently kept at the Louvre. And among the tombs recently discovered was a human-shaped lead sarcophagus that archaeologists believe may date to the 14th century, if they won't know for sure until it's opened. They did insert a little small camera to see a little bit of what's in there.
Mm.
So yeah, that's some neat stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Neat that they're, you know, it's unfortunate that they had that cathedral kind of had to burn down for all the stuff he found, but, you know, life gives you lemons, you know? Well, next up. So, cannot believe this. Okay, so the Ever Forward is a cargo ship, and about a month ago, it got lost in Chesapeake Bay, and this week, it was finally freed. Took a high tide, tugboats and barges, and it finally came loose.
Yep. It just keeps it going for the spirit of the Ever Given.
Mm-hmm.
The one that got stuck in the Suez Canal. But yeah, this one was gathering cargo for... Where was it going here? Just loaded up cargo in Baltimore, was headed south to Norfolk, Virginia. When it ran aground on March 13th, container ship reportedly missed a turn leaving Baltimore and causing it to end up in shallow waters off Pasadena.
Mm.
Crews worked for weeks to pluck the ship free. They used every facet of the sector, including dredging, marine construction, tugs, barges, deck barges, crane barges, and pole barges, but finally got it free here the other day. Mm. So now the 1,095-foot ship is free from the shallows. Able to finish its trip
mm-hmm.
on Easter Sunday.
Mm. Yeah. Neat. So now we got some science news. Yep, it's true. NASA has announced that they want to probe Uranus soon. Yeah. I know. All the jokes. Go ahead, get them out of your system. But this is serious.
Yep, they are planning on sending a robotic mission to orbit Uranus.
Mm-hmm.
A probe that can land on a potentially life-supporting moon of Saturn.
Mm.
And a better plan for astronauts to do high-quality science on the moon.
Mm-hmm.
These are the top priorities that they have outlined in a report from an influential group that's advising NASA on where to boldly go in the next decade, 2023 to 2032. Every 10 years, the prestigious National Academies of Science, Engineering, and Medicine brings together committees of space experts to survey the field of planetary science and reach a consensus on the best way for NASA to explore strange new worlds. And yeah, the last time around in 2011, expert advisors told NASA to gather an interesting selection of rocks on Mars and work to bring those pristine samples back to Earth. Chemical analyses... as to show whether the red planet ever had life. They also argued for a mission to Europa, the moon of Jupiter that seems to have an ocean of water beneath its icy surface. But yeah, NASA embraced those goals and has been making progress, but planetary scientists have started to worry that cost overruns might threaten the ability to visit other places in the solar system that beckon.
Mm.
So yeah, they want a trip to Uranus to help scientists understand ice planets, ice giants.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike the rocky planets, you know, like Mars and gas giants like Jupiter, ice giants, Uranus, and Neptune, never been studied with a dedicated mission to orbit and study them. Uranus, the seventh planet from the sun, has only ever been visited by NASA's Voyager 2 probe, which flew by in 1986, coming within about 50,000 miles of it. And in recent years, detection of planets in alien solar systems show that ice giant planets are likely the most common class of planets in the universe. We saw this mission as delivering absolutely transformative breakthrough science because we know so little about these systems. Yeah. The Enceladus, one of Saturn's moons, is another scientifically compelling destination. It's thought to have an ocean of liquid water under an icy crust, just like Europa. This moon sends plumes of that material out into space, making it easier to obtain samples that originated deep within. Mm. So that report recommends sending a probe that could arrive there in the early 2050s, land on the surface, and search for evidence of life and fresh plume material that rains down on it. NASA, they also say NASA needs to get serious about doing science in its multi-billion effort to return astronauts to the moon, called the Artemis program.
Mm-hmm.
But the failure to do this so far means the scientific return to the astronauts' initial trips will not be as significant as it could be, maybe minimal. But the group found there's a lack of organization accountability at NASA for working high-priority science into the planning for moon landings. Planetary exploration has been done for decades with robots, and it's separated from human spaceflight within the agency's organizational structure. So yeah, there's that. The report runs through a bevy of smaller missions around the solar system that have merit, such as visits to the dwarf planet Ceres and to Titan, the largest moon of Saturn. Gives a notable shout-out to the effort to protect Earth from potentially hazardous space rocks. That's some of the cool stuff they are recommending.
Take a look at. Yeah. All right. And that is the end of the science part of the program, and now we're moving on to... And the first thing we got for entertainment-wise is... After being only in existence for a little over a month, CNN Plus will be shutting down as of April 30th.
Yep. I think that thing will be maybe 32 days old when it shuts down.
Yeah.
Barely a month in that. But makes sense because I can never figure out why CNN Plus needed to exist.
I think they were trying to tap into the nation money that, the problem is that, you know, CNN tries to present itself as a proper 24 hours news station, whereas Fox News is, well, yeah. But yeah, I also had no idea what they expected out of this.
Yeah. But yeah, that's, going to shut down.
Mm-hmm.
Seems like they, maybe initial estimates had about 100,000 to 150,000 subscribers in the first few weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Which is alright. I thought there was hope for reaching their goal for the year, but obviously the new people running it just don't see the point of the whole service.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go.
Yep. Yeah. And now for some news about Netflix. Netflix is having issues right now, and they announced this week that they had lost over 2,000 subscribers in the first quarter, and they're expecting to lose 2 million by the end of the second quarter.
Yeah.
And on top of that, because, you know, I mean, part of the problem is right now their rates are kind of just not sustainable right now. They've gotten higher to the point that a lot of people just can't afford them now. And on top of that, they're now trying to launch a cheaper ad-supported streaming plan. And the problem with that is one of the, you know, selling points of Netflix is the fact that you don't have to deal with ads.
Yeah.
So
that seems to be the thing that everybody's doing.
Yeah. Plus, I mean, let's be honest, you know, Disney Plus and HBO Max are kind of eating their lunch as well.
Yeah.
Which is also an issue. And because, you know, Netflix is no longer the only game in town, other places have been slowly, you know, taking away any part of their library that was previously available on Netflix, which basically leaves Netflix with not a whole lot, really. I mean, they still got their originals, and that's all right, but, you know, that's not a whole lot right now.
Yeah, they've got a lot of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
There's still a lot of media companies that aren't in, don't have a subscription service of their own, but Netflix is not a Disney or a Warner Brothers.
Mm-mm.
They don't have the resources of those companies.
No.
And those companies are being very aggressive with Disney Plus and its pricing right now, which is very cheap.
Mm-hmm.
It won't stay that way, but...
No.
HBO Max does a lot of weird offers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I'm currently on an offer where I'm paying half the price for the $15 tier.
Mm-hmm.
For since October, and then they said, oh, let's do this for another 6 months. Said, oh, okay, sure. So for $7.50 a month, HBO Max is pretty damn good.
Mm-hmm.
Similar to what Disney Plus is for, I think it's $7 now for a month.
Mm-hmm.
I think they've raised their prices for that. So that's kind of the tough place Netflix is in.
Mm-hmm.
They're trying to counter that. Netflix is Netflix. There's no other revenue streams really for them.
Mm.
Compared to Disney, which has, you know, all these networks, stations, and they have their parks, and they have all this other stuff to bring in money that Disney Plus doesn't have to, you know, bring in the bulk of the money for them.
Yeah.
That's kind of where they're finding themselves, so much so that they're just constant news of, like, they're very worried about password sharing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, maybe rightly so, but, you know, they need people to stay more than they need to, you know, go after these people that are sharing passwords. I don't know to what degree people are doing that.
Yeah. I mean, if they keep doing this, they're going to end up going faster. Like, they're going to, I mean, Netflix are basically the people that killed Blockbuster, and if they aren't careful, they're going to end up going the way Blockbuster did. So, yeah.
I don't know about anytime soon for that.
Oh, not anytime soon. I mean, they're still on pretty stable footing right now.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
Because, it's like they are potentially going to lose 2 million out of, like, 220 million.
Yeah.
It's
a large number, but compared to what their base is, it's something they can manage.
Yeah.
Mm. Anyway, moving on from there, we got some movie news. Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse, which I guess is the sequel to Into the Spider-Verse, has been delayed to 2023. That's next year. Among some other delays as well. Let's be honest, some of these were going to be delayed. But,
yeah. But yeah, they delayed Spider-Man Across the Spider-Verse to June 2nd, 2023. I think it was supposed to be later this year.
Mm.
Yeah, October 7th. So that's a good size delay.
Mm.
As a result, that pushes the sequel to that, Part 2.
Mm.
That was in the works, has been given a release date of March 29th, 2024.
Mm.
Going to have those hitting a little bit closer. What else they're going to have here? I think there's Madam Web,
mm-hmm.
a new entry in the sort of Spider-Verse of sorts there. Marvel Cinematic Universe, Sony Marvel Cinematic Universe,
mm-hmm.
Is now slated to hit July 7th, 2023.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's that one. Yeah, they revealed the Equalizer 3, a Denzel Washington action sequel there. That's going to be happening later. So, let's see. Wild Wild Crocodile, live-action CG musical adaptation of the children's book series.
Mm-hmm.
Has been bumped from November 18th to... Or bumped up from November 18th, 2022. That's October 7th. That Across the Spider-Verse used to hold. Let's see, a Devotion, an aerial Korean war epic based on the best-selling book of the same name.
Mm-hmm.
That's been dated for limited release beginning October 14th.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And now a little bit of television news. A while back, we talked about when the newest season of The Masked Singer was being filmed, that one of the very first individuals that got unmasked was none other than Rudy Giuliani, and how when it happened, literally the host just said, "I'm done," and just walked away. Well, that episode finally aired this week, and it went about as badly as you can expect.
Yeah, they did a lot of work editing it.
Yeah.
So one of the weird things at, if you don't watch the show, is that they don't actually have crowds.
No.
There since COVID has hit.
Yeah.
So they edit in crowd reactions from old episodes.
Yeah.
In weird ways. So, you know, they have Rudy show up out of his dumb jack-in-the-box thing.
Mm-hmm.
And have him talk about himself or whatever. As they, like, the only controversial thing they bring up is the Four Seasons thing.
Mm-hmm.
Where they claim they were at the Four Seasons Hotel, but it was Four Seasons Landscaping.
Mm-hmm.
Like, to do their big post-election speech thing.
Mm-hmm.
Conference. And that's about it. The reactions they get from the judges, you can tell Ken Jeong is not too happy about this.
Yeah.
They end up having him sing Bad to the Bone by George Thorogood, which he cannot sing at all.
Nope.
So you would not be surprised by the show. For a split second, Ken Jeong leaving, saying, I'm done with this, and leave.
Mm-hmm.
I believe the other judge, Robin Thicke, also ended up leaving a little bit after him, but was not shown on the episode that they did there.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, did a lot of creative editing with the crowd stuff to make it seem like, oh, there's, you know, trying to say, like, oh, he's, this is good that he's on here, this kind of thing, which it's not, because obviously his big thing in recent memory is he tried to overthrow the government.
Yeah.
And that shouldn't entitle you to be on a show like The Masked Singer.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people be like, oh, What's-Her-Face was on there, Sarah Palin.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, yeah, she didn't try to recently overthrow the government when she showed up on there.
Yeah, like, she's a punchline, not clear and present danger.
Yeah. She's not actively being sued by the people making election software for mistruths and all that kind of shit.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, that's kind of the whole thing there. The ratings were pretty poor for this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Has been the season in general, but
yeah.
This episode did as poorly as the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
It's already doing pretty poorly. Yeah, they were thinking things from the hints they were getting, like, oh, maybe it's Robert Duvall, or what are the guests that they have here? I don't think I'm mentioning in this article, might be in a different one, but
mm-hmm.
yeah, Joe Pesci, or Al Roker, Robert Duvall, Elon Musk.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, man, Elon Musk would have been more fun because he's not actively, you know, doing the worst things possible for this country.
Mm-hmm.
He's just a rich asshole.
Yeah.
So yeah, there you go. It happened. It was as bad as everybody thought it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So there you go. Good luck with that, Fox.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Also, we now know that It Takes Two, the recent game that by, what's his name?
Joseph Ferris?
Yeah, the guy who was behind, you know, A Way Out and Tale of Two Brothers, that stuff. That game was a huge hit, got really great reviews, and it's now it's going to be getting the movie treatment at Amazon.
Yep.
Let's be honest, that's not unexpected. Like, Joseph Ferris has a background in film direct and filmmaking, so
yeah,
you know, any of his games being made into a film is just pretty much it pretty much makes sense.
Yeah, and the production company that worked on the Sonic movies is also involved with this, including the writers for those two movies are adapting the game for this film. But also The Rock is part of this executive producer team for this, so that's a whole weird thing as well. But yeah, seems like it'll fit pretty well. Most of the story's already there. It's not like Sonic the Hedgehog or the Mario movie where you gotta do a bit of extra work to make it all fit.
Yeah, I mean, the game's plot is basically a Pixar movie, pretty much. Oh god, that just means I'm gonna have to relive that freaking thing with the toy elephant again. Oh boy. Well, anyway. And finally, last but not least, we got a trailer for next movie, Thor, Love and Thunder.
Yep. Where they finally introduce the new Thor, Lady Thor. Played by Natalie Portman, her character Jane.
Jane Foster? Jane Foster, yes. The reason she ends up getting, being able to have Thor is because she is fighting cancer, basically.
I don't know if that's in this plot here. People aren't sure if it's like, oh, maybe this is a different Jane.
It could be.
Foster from another universe.
Possible.
Multiverse thing, but yeah, as things have progressed with the story, the Guardians of the Galaxy are in this. Because that is who Thor has joined for the time being. For his newest adventure, I guess. There you go. He's trying to retire, but it's been interrupted by a galactic killer known as Gore the God Butcher.
Yep.
Made by Christian Bale.
Why not?
So yeah, that'll be out in July 8th.
Alright. Awesome. And with that, yes, I do believe we have ourselves a show, folks. Yes, we do. We have ourselves a show. So, with that, I would like to remind all of our listeners, you get a question or something that should be up there, you get in contact with us at letsweekenders@gmail.com. That's letsweekenders@gmail.com. We got it linked for in the show notes. Also, on top of Apple Podcasts, you can catch our little bit of unscripted shenanigans at TuneIn, Google Play, RSS, archive.org, or any kind of podcast aggregator that you can think of. And we're going to go ahead and here. Once again, our thoughts are still with the people of Ukraine and Russia. We would once again like to encourage you that even though the pandemic seems to be on the downslide right now, it is still a good idea to keep yourself protected. So if you have not yet been vaccinated, we encourage you to do so. And if you have already been vaccinated and feel like you need one, please go get a booster. Do not hesitate. They're freely available and pretty easy to get to. We're going to end it there. Thank you, Chris Logie, once again for joining me. And check us out again next week where we have a whole new slew of things that life gives us once again next week. See you all then. Good night, everybody.